This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price made a stop in Charleston yesterday as part of his national listening tour. Price is traveling the country, meeting with local officials about how the federal government can assist them in their fight against the opioid epidemic. The stop comes on the heels of two federal actions that could impact drug treatment in the state. Ashton Mara reports.
West Virginia's opioid overdose death rate is 2.5 times the national average, the highest in the country. Last year, 864 West Virginians died from an overdose, up by more than 17% from the year before. West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources Secretary Bill Crouch shared those statistics at a press conference Tuesday. Crouch hosted U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price for a closed-door meeting about the state's struggle with substance abuse and what the federal government can do to help.
We are losing a generation of West Virginians to drug abuse. And in some cases, when it comes to an addicted mother with her newborn baby, I worry we're losing two generations.
Secretary Price says President Trump is committed to battling the opioid epidemic, not just in West Virginia, but across the country. Shortly after taking office, Trump created a bipartisan commission on drug addiction, led by New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, and last month announced nearly $500 million in federal grants awarded to states to combat substance abuse. Counselor to the president, Kellyanne Conway, says that's Trump's plan to support efforts on the front lines.
This will not be solved from Washington, D.C. This will be ameliorated and annihilated at the state and local levels.
Price says that push toward supporting local efforts is why he's traveling the country to meet with state officials. But it's also why the administration is supporting two essentially budgetary actions that seem to put substance abuse treatment at risk in West Virginia, at least for some populations. The first is health care. 170,000 West Virginians received Medicaid coverage when former Governor Earl Ray Tomlin chose to expand the program as part of the Affordable Care Act. According to Secretary Crouch, some 50,000 of those West Virginians also suffer with an addiction. Medicaid does cover substance abuse treatment, but a Trump-backed plan to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act would also put an end to Medicaid expansion and result in the potential loss of treatment for those 50,000 West Virginians.
We have serious concerns about what is going to happen with that population. Our crisis right now is difficult to deal with. If we have an additional 50,000 individuals with no coverage, no way to get treatment, we think our problem is going to be light years more difficult.
Considering those difficulties, Crouch was asked about his ability to convince federal officials to keep the expanded version of the program. But the secretary says the ACA repeal comes with something that's good for West Virginia.
As a state that wants more flexibility in terms of Medicaid and how we utilize Medicaid monies, that's very welcome to us.
Let me just share a word on that, if I may. And
Secretary Price quickly backed up Crouch during their post-meeting press conference. Price says the current Medicaid system requires states to treat covered populations the same, even when their needs vary.
It's imperative that folks have access to the care that they need so that we can make certain that this scourge, especially this scourge of the opioid crisis and addiction, is addressed in a health care manner that keeps in mind those patients, so that patients and families and doctors are making decisions, not Washington, D.C.
The repeal and replace bill that allows for state flexibility but also ends Medicaid expansion made it through the U.S. House of Representatives last week with 3 supporting votes from West Virginia's delegation. As it heads to the Senate now, though, both Senators Joe Manchin and Shelley Moore Capito have expressed concerns. The second action that may put some substance abuse programs at risk comes in the form of a funding proposal for a federal office. Trump's administration announced a significant cut to the Office of National Drug Control Policy last week, a 95% reduction in his proposed 2018 budget. Price says while the administration has proposed cutting funding to the office, it's committed to increasing spending to combat the opioid epidemic elsewhere, including through the Department of Health and Human Services. But when asked if the cut was a result of failed outcomes from the office, Price says,
"It's a great question because that's exactly what we're asking, and that's what the commission is going to be asking, is what is it that the federal government is doing that's actually solving the problem, that's assisting in getting better outcomes, and what is it that the federal government is doing wasting taxpayer dollars and resources?"
Under President Obama, the Office of National Drug Control Policy was responsible for coordinating efforts between public health and public safety officials to reduce drug use across the country. The office, which is overseen directly by the White House, does not currently have a page on the administration's website. The proposals and their effects have some West Virginia advocacy groups speaking out, attempting to sway West Virginia leaders to take a different approach. Members of the group West Virginians for Affordable Healthcare stood outside Price's Charleston meeting in an attempt to speak with him Tuesday, but were denied access to the listening session. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara at the State House.
A West Virginia reporter was arrested before Price's meeting at the Capitol yesterday. Dan Hyman of the Public News Service was charged with a misdemeanor offense of willfully disrupting a governmental process. According to a complaint filed in Kanawha County Magistrate Court, police say Hyman approached Secretary Price and counsel to the president, Kellyanne Conway, as they entered the Capitol Tuesday afternoon, asking them questions. The complaint accuses Hyman of aggressively breaching the Secret Service escorting the two when he was detained by Capitol Police. Hyman says he was, quote, "just trying to do my job," unquote. The West Virginia ACLU released a statement defending the reporter, saying the arrest sets a dangerous precedent and violates the First Amendment to the Constitution. Hyman could face a fine of up to $100 and 6 months in jail. We received a lot of feedback recently about another story on the opioid crisis. Appalachia Health News Coordinator Carol Lofton recently filed a report about different approaches to treating women who are addicted to drugs while pregnant and their newborns who are often born with a drug withdrawal symptoms classified as neonatal abstinence syndrome. We heard from several health professionals about the terms she used in that report, terms that have become common in the public discourse about addiction. Jesse Wright sat down with Jonathan Stoltman, a behavioral neurosciences PhD student at West Virginia University, and Laura Lander, assistant professor in WVU's Department of Behavioral Medicine and Psychiatry, to talk about why the language of addiction is so important, especially when it comes to treatment.
Jonathan, you reached out to us after you saw Kara's article. You saw some language that was problematic in Kara's story. Can you tell me a little bit about what spurred you to contact us?
Sure. So I think that West Virginia Public Broadcasting has done a really good job of covering some of these issues. And neonatal abstinence syndrome in particular is really important to the state and the country right now. So as researchers, we've been really sensitive to how people talk about some of these issues. And we know that that can really have an impact on treatment seeking and retention. And so as I was reading through the article, I noticed, of course, the headline first where it talked about addicted babies. And Laura and I have talked about it before as well, where babies can't be addicted generally. They would be born into withdrawal is the medically appropriate way to talk about it. So that's kind of a little bit of a yellow flag to start. And then as I was working my way through the article, too, it was using some of the terminology that's been since updated, such as clean or dirty. And these are just sorts of things that can reduce stigma towards these individuals and can really help them seek treatment and do a better job of being healthy.
How do you balance the need in terms of making the language accessible to people in talking about addiction and talking about treatment versus kind of complicating that and making it harder to understand for a sort of a general, a sort of a baseline population?
I think it's a really important issue, in particular with addiction, since a lot of people are interested in it, a lot of people are talking about it, a lot of people are wondering about it. It's difficult to do it in a way that's concise is kind of the point. And I think the feedback we've heard before, too, is it just being unnecessarily politically correct? And when we talk about it as professionals, and most professionals agree with this as well, is that it's not a matter of being politically correct. It's just generally being correct. So addiction, because babies can't be addicted, it's just not appropriate to describe them in that way. And what we know about addiction as a word or addicted being stigmatizing too. It really emphasizes the correctness of how we talk about that issue.
Laura, do you have thoughts on
that? To chime in on what is addiction, I mean, what constitutes someone being addicted? The hallmarks of addiction are obsession, so thinking about it all the time, and compulsion, doing it all the time. Now, babies really don't have the capacity, the cognitive capacity to be obsessed with anything, nor do they have the volition to choose to do it all the time or to have access to, you know, do it or not do it. And so that's why it's sort of inaccurate as a descriptor. You know, babies are certainly expressive when they are uncomfortable, and so they're expressing that they're uncomfortable when they cry or when they have certainly a biological response to withdraw. But they are not necessarily addicted, and so it's kind of just inaccurate in that way in terms of what addicted or addiction means.
And so I guess how should we talk about it, both as a society and then as journalists as well?
So the accurate – what babies are experiencing with neonatal abstinence syndrome is withdrawal, and there are both treatments such as medicines that help withdraw, and there are also treatments that are non-medicinal that are called kind of comfort care, which is often swaddling, low-light, low-stimulation environments, which can really help with some of that overstimulation that occurs when they're experiencing some withdrawal. In terms of the stigmatizing language, I'm not into political correctness per se, but what I am into is trying to get people access to treatment. And stigmatization of substance use disorders prevents people from admitting that they have a problem and prevents them from accessing care.
The critics that we hear from say, well, I didn't choose my cancer, and I'm struggling to get treatment. I'm struggling to get the resources to deal with my problem that I didn't have a choice in. Why should I have sympathy for someone who has chosen to become addicted to drugs? And now we as a society have to focus resources on treating their medical issue when it's something that they should have taken some personal responsibility for themselves. I mean, how do you respond to that kind of criticism?
So I think one of the responses that I have is that there are many diseases where behavior basically turns on the predisposition. So type 2 diabetes being, you know, an obvious one. Whereas if the person always keeps their diet under control, they will never actually develop type 2 diabetes. And substance use disorders are the same. So if the person never uses substances, they will never become, you know, addicted. So there's often a behavioral component to many medical diseases, and addiction is no different. So I don't think that explains, you know, why. I think what makes substance use disorders hard is because the behavioral component is really unpleasant, and it hurts other people, and it's bad for society and children and families. And so that gets people angry and upset and sad, and it affects so many people on a personal level as well as on a kind of societal level. But the reality is those behaviors are symptoms of the disease. And over the past, you know, 15 years, we've learned more and more about the neurobiology of addiction and really seen through MRI and brain scans how people's brains change as a result of substance use disorders. And that the very part of the brain that's involved in making moral decisions is negatively impacted. So that if that part of your brain is negatively impacted, it's going to be very hard for you to make positive decisions.
And I think to add to that, too, the neurobiology component, the structure and functional changes that we see in people with addiction are pretty profound. And so that's kind of where we've started to look at it from a medical lens more so, is that it's very clear that there are things that we can point to that are really different physiologically with those individuals. So it starts to shape up to be more of a medical condition.
That was Jesse Wright talking with Jonathan Stoltman and Laura Lander from West Virginia University. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, Marshall University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. I'm Teresa Wills.